Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we talk with Carissa Conti about her book, Chasing Phantoms. But first, we're joined by documentary film producer James Carman, who put together a controversial film called The Hidden Hand, Alien Contact and the Government Cover-Up. He joins us to talk about an upcoming screening of the film. James, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You are the director and the producer of a very interesting film called The Hidden Hand, Alien Contact and Government Cover-Up. It's won awards. It's a fascinating documentary that explores the possibility of an extraterrestrial presence here on Earth. And it's something that we frequently take a look at on this show. But you're doing a screening coming up soon, and it's in Wappinger Falls. You've asked me to present some of my footage, but tell listeners about your film and the screening that's coming up.
It's in Wappinger Falls. It's at COSM, COSM, and that's Alex Gray's Art Church in upstate New York. And if you don't know who Alex Gray is, he's one of the most talented and well-known painters of our time, and it's a real privilege to be able to go up to his place and to put together it's a workshop. So we're having Richard Dolan come, we're having Duncan Cameron from the Montauk Project come, we're having Jeff Brady showing his UFO footage and comparing it to UFO footage from around the world, and we're having Dr. William Viand speak, and he's from up near Pine Bush, and Pine Bush is famous for its UFO sightings and also famous for its decades-long history of contact and abduction. So it's going to be a great show, and then plus I'll be showing the film. Alan Steinfeld will be there, and he'll be the MC. And then after we show the film, then we're going to have all of us together, and we're going to have a big kind of panel discussion, and so it's going to be fun.
Can you give us the date and time?
Starting on March 29th, starts at 3 o'clock, and that goes to 10 p.m. And if you just want to see the film, you can come at 6:30, and then it'll be 6:30 to 10. So that's less expensive. Hidden Hand, the movie.
HiddenHandTheMovie.com. Yeah. And James Carman, you have worked and investigated into the paranormal all your life. All right, I look forward to it.
Thank you so much. You know, I think it's going to be like a once-in-a-lifetime event. I mean, it's like you have someone like Richard Dolan, who's so well-respected, and someone like Duncan Cameron, who was the lead psychic for the Montauk Project, and then Dr. Viand, who is a lifelong contactee and abductee, and then you have someone like yourself who's actually filming kind of nuts-and-bolts phenomenon. It's going to be great.
I agree. The Hidden Hand is the name of the film. Thank you so much for being on the show.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Last year on this show, we discussed with several guests the quiet buildup of hundreds and thousands of microwave antenna towers, radar domes, and multiple ionospheric heater sites. This in context of our environment being saturated with man-made electromagnetic and microwave radiation. We've also had many guests on to talk about how this wireless radiation is interfering with the human brain frequency, and it was pointed out again by our last guest, Dr. Carman Bolter. The discussion, if you have caught the past shows, connect to the work of Wilhelm Reich and what's known as deadly orgone radiation, or DOR. DOR, psychic awareness and real-time surveillance, was explored in past interviews with Don and Carol Croft, who run the site etherickwarriors.com. Finally, past guest Dr. John Hall, who wrote A New Breed, Satellite Terrorism in America, went into detail about tracking individuals by satellite, real-time surveillance, and what's known as gang stalking. With this bit of background from past shows, You can now understand the highly technical apparatus set up around us that can manipulate the etheric realm. Our guest, Carissa Conti, is very familiar with this concept. She's the author of the book Chasing Phantoms, Personal Experiences, Observations, and Theories into the Abduction Mind Control Phenomenon. It's partially compiled from years of journal entries and various perspectives describing personal experiences with psychic warfare, dreamtime programming, military abductions, and harassment techniques. Can you protect yourself? Carissa says, yes, it's possible, and it can begin by changing your thought and behavior patterns. Carissa, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, I know you don't do interviews, and this is one of a couple of them that you've done so far, and what caught my attention on your book and companion website is that a lot of the book is compiled from journals and consistent note-taking and writing down dreams. And it's a really unique approach. The writing really begins to paint a very interesting picture to the reader. And your book is titled Chasing Phantoms, Personal Experiences, Observations and Theories into the Abduction Mind Control Phenomena. Can you tell listeners a bit about yourself, why you wrote the book, and how you put it together?
Okay. Well, I'm 39, and I've always had a bit of an unusual existence. As a young kid, I was hugely interested in all the weird subjects. Starting by the age of 9, I was obsessively checking out every book I could find at our local library about everything, you know, from the ghosts and the paranormal, the UFOs and abductions, psychic powers, you name it. But when I ran out of books in the kids section, I moved on over to the adults. My interest in these subjects was inadvertently encouraged by my parents, who had various experience in these subjects and talked about their experiences freely. Both my parents had psychic abilities, especially my dad, and he grew up in like a haunted house in New York with a lot of stories about what went on there. Then he later had his UFO close encounter at a military base in Southeast Asia during Vietnam. I had a few very minor weird experiences as a kid discussed in part two of my book, and I started demonstrating natural psychic abilities starting around my teenage years, which is something passed down from both sides of my family. But none of it was enough to really jump out at me at the time in a red flag kind of way. I didn't recognize that it meant anything compared to what I read about. I didn't think I was anything special. So I had the foundation for the weird stuff thanks to my family, but I was always of the belief that I was just somehow somebody, you know, who was interested in all, but with some minor abilities, but where nothing truly exciting ever actually happened to me. Even though, you know, in retrospect, there were indicators that stuff was actually happening, but I didn't realize that until later on.
Mm-hmm.
So that lasted until my mid-20s. Then the next stage of my awakening, I guess you could call it, started in 2000 after bringing my younger brother, Joe, to come live with me in Southern California, where I was living at the time. I was 25 and he was 19. And Joe is a whole story in itself, which I talk about on my website. In this write-up, it's called The Vortex. But Joe was the one who always had the overt paranormal weirdness surrounding him since he was a kid, as well as strong psychic abilities. You know, but when he was a teen, he went a little wayward, I guess you could say, and spent several years locked up in juvie and psych hospitals in Connecticut. And after that, whatever had already been happening to him and whatever natural abilities he had were cranked up to just a whole other level. And basically what came out of lockup was completely different than what went in. It's to the level of what you'll see in an article that's called Operation Open Eyes, Five Easy Steps to Create a Manchurian Candidate by Gunther Rosbacher. You can find this piece posted on the Rumor Mill News website, and I also include the link in my book, Chasing Phantoms.
Mm-hmm.
But in that piece, Gunther outlines the government's process for selecting and programming society's throwaway kids and prison inmates to become Manchurian candidates who have multiple personas and can be programmed to suit various agendas. And it matched up to my brother's situation with the changes that he experienced in personality and abilities and the things that began happening to him after he was released. So I get into details of that in my book. But for instance, after getting out of lockup, Joe had this new split off multiple persona named Sean Hill that was running around doing petty criminal nonsense, but which he could only vaguely remember. He was now supposedly being followed around in vehicles by the Thems, I guess you could say, and had abduction flashback memories. And, you know, our long-distance phone conversations were experiencing overt interference, I guess monitoring, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
As the situation progressed over the next 2 years, he was supposedly being given these agent provocateur type assignments that I had to talk him out of, that he said he was supposed to do for them to prove that he was ready for the next level. And that's a word-for-word quote of something that Gunther discusses in his article. So something obviously happened to Joe while he was locked up. And in my opinion, it relates to some sort of mind control programming experimentation. And it was very interested in keeping tabs on him once he was released. And now that I'd brought him to California to come live with me, because I was trying to help him get back on his feet, it meant that whatever was going on in his life bled over to me. So basically, like, a door was opened. So most everything I talk about on my website started happening to me after Joe came back into my life in 2000. The paranormal, the ear tones, the number sightings, the deja vus, strange synchronicities, overt abduction happenings, hyperdimensional targeting, you call it, including the anomalous marks that were appearing on my body, which I have a lot of photos of that on my website. But before that, whatever had gone on in my life was always pretty subtle, and for the most part, and didn't overtly interfere with anything. But after that, it was like it was just on. So that's where, like, the next stage of my awareness began. Supernatural phenomenon and weirdness, you know, was still following Joe like a magnet, same as when he was a kid. But now it was just to this whole other level, because you also had this additional human thems thing going on, and the mind control element in the mix, giving him knowledge and abilities he didn't used to have. And again, since I was living with him, it was now becoming a part of my reality as well. So my write-up on my website called The Vortex was born out of all the paranormal experiences we experienced during that time period where we were roommating together. And that's where I received firsthand proof about non-physical, non-human entities and all manner of paranormal phenomenon. Just so many things happened. That's why I refer to that time period as my crash course introduction into the woo-woo.
Makes sense to me. By the way, the website is intoworlds.net. That's in and the number two, worlds.net. So plenty of information to write the book. While this was going on, you were logging information and keeping track of times and dates.
Well, sort of. At this point, yes and no. During that time period where I was living with Joe and we were roommating together, I was documenting stuff in my journal at the time, but I wasn't very good with the dates, and I wasn't good at getting photos. And actually, because I wasn't very good at it, you know, that influenced me later on to do a better job and to make sure I document things better. So that's why my website is the way it is, where things are so documented. It's because I didn't start out that way. I made that mistake.
Mm. And then reflecting back, you could see, obviously, the value in logging the information, dates and times,
yeah,
because it reveals a pattern. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. Can you briefly tell listeners what MILABS is, MILABS. I'm sure some listeners may not be familiar with that term.
MILABS, or some people pronounce it MILABS. I don't know. I've heard it both ways. It's an abbreviation for military abductions. It was coined, as far as I know, by Dr. Helmut Lammer, and it's the title of his book by the same name. And it involves civilians being followed, monitored, and basically harassed, including being abducted, interrogated, and maybe even implanted by factions of the government and military, following on the heels of their supposed alien abductions. So the accepted reason for this in abduction research is that the military wants to learn as much as possible about the alien presence by abducting and tracking the same people that the aliens are. So, but in my book, I kind of make sure to define the term to include any human, military, or government taking, experimenting on, and programming other humans, whether military personnel in her family or civilians, and whether they're at odds with the aliens or working alongside them. So any situation where there seems to be a military government connection involved, period. So it doesn't, for me, it doesn't have to be limited to people who have aliens going on. It's just any time the government is chasing around after people, following them and taking them.
Hmm. Your book is really compelling, very interesting regarding the firsthand experiences. Can you give us an idea of some of the types of harassment and high strangeness that you experienced early on in Oregon, California, and Virginia?
Hmm. Yeah, like I said, it kind of started only after Joe came into my life and like a door was opened. And stuff that was happening to him started to kind of bleed over to me. Although at the time, I still thought I was removed from this somehow. That is all his deal, you know. It's not me, but it did become me. But I had, like, for instance, my first overtly known abduction experience in October 2001 while I was still in California, and that was a major turning point in my life to know for a fact that I'd been taken and that something had been done to me. Oregon, I didn't have too much. I was only there for about 4 months. Oregon in itself was weird, but things really picked up when I moved to Florida after that. I moved to Fort Lauderdale in 2002. That's when I talk about it in part two of my book, just so much stuff. It just kind of erupted. I had what seemed to be human male like thems following me around on a couple of occasions. It seems stuff had been in my apartment when I wasn't there. I had more and more of the overt abductions where I had flashes of memories in my head. Nothing really complex, just little bits and pieces, snippets, and marks on my body that weren't there when I went to bed, and they were there when I'd wake up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Black helicopters.
Mm-hmm.
Which oftentimes gets ridiculed in conspiracy research, but
mm-hmm.
that started happening. Never thought about them before, and then I had four or five instances of those, which I talk about in my book, which, by the way, I just wanted to tell people who are listening, the book is free. It's free for anybody to download the PDF, so you can get it for free.
Paint that picture of the men coming into Denny's and the tension there. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I had an instance. I was with my boyfriend, Tom. We were at a Denny's in Fort Lauderdale. It's on Commercial Boulevard and Federal Highway, and we were there at like 2 a.m. And prior to that incident, I had kind of mentally put out the thought that I wanted to see one of them and know it, that it was them. So I'd already kind of had that thought that I wanted to see them. And so it seems like maybe got my wish, because we were at a Denny's in the middle of the night, and like I said, it was 2 a.m., so it was an odd time of the day, and we're sitting in a booth, and I'm facing the front of the restaurant, and I felt them before I even saw them, so I had this tug to look up at what was two guys coming down the aisle towards me, and they were dressed in corporate clothes. One of them had the full suit with the jacket and the tie. The other one just had the dress shirt with the tie. And they were staring intently at me. And one of them was staring at me with disdain, as if he knew me and didn't like me. And the other one was staring at me with kind of a weird smirk. And the one that was smirking at me, I had recognition of. It's like I knew who he was, even though I had no conscious recollection of him. I recognized him. And I just sat there kind of frozen in my seat, feeling like, uh-oh, like I was in trouble. I just felt like I'd done something wrong. I felt like they disapproved of what I was doing, because it probably had to do with the fact that I'd parted ways in life with my brother and moved to Florida and had partnered up with Tom, and he was setting me on a more positive path in life, and I just got the impression that that's not how they wanted things to go. And so being that it was 2 a.m., people aren't usually dressed like that in the middle of the night, so that was kind of maybe one of the things that gave it away, that it was them, just how fancy they were dressed, and it just didn't fit in with the Denny's at 2 a.m., and then the fact that they were intently staring at me and acting as if they knew me. And even Tom recognized that, so after they passed by me, he asked me, you know, why the hell were those guys staring at you? So even he noticed it, and Tom described him as kind of almost looking almost like mafia, just like they had a lot of power.
There are many other situations that you describe in your book. That one's very interesting. And time when you were in Walgreens and you were reading something and somebody walks by. And
yeah, that was another one. Yeah, I was standing there in the magazine aisle reading an article actually about the upcoming second Matrix movie, Matrix Reloaded, of all things. And I became aware of the scent of a men's cologne as it went, kind of, this guy walked by, and it got my attention because I recognized the smell, that I didn't like it. So I looked up from my magazine and saw this guy, you know, walking down away from me. I never saw his face. He had white hair and dressed, again, just immaculate, like the guys at Denny's were, with the dress shirt, the white dress shirt, the dress pants with the belt and the shiny shoes. And I didn't think much of it because we were only about a mile from downtown Fort Lauderdale, and it was 5:15 or so in the afternoon, so maybe after work. So I just figured it was a guy from downtown and he was there after work. So I went back to reading my article, and a few minutes later, all of a sudden I heard a male voice say, "Reading anything interesting?" And I looked up again, and this time it was the same guy, but going back the other way to my left, back up to the front of the store. So I still never saw his face. And nobody else was in the aisle at that point. It was just me. And he just spoke to me with such disdain for no reason. Based on other things that were happening during that same time period around that incident, it seemed to me that it was possibly another one of those guys.
Really weird. Now, some listeners might be thinking, well, it is possible that you're a bit paranoid and you could be making things a little worse than what things really are. But what you do so well in this book is show the larger pattern at work. And not many people are able to do that.
Well, yeah. And like I always say, is like each individual thing taken on its own doesn't necessarily prove anything. But it's when you pool everything together and you have a lot of things happening during the same time period that, and then it just becomes more and more impossible, or it's just enough to really get your attention.
Definitely. One of the areas that we've often discussed, not directly, but it has been mentioned in passing from a number of guests, is the monitoring, real-time monitoring of people who are psychic and those who are waking up or becoming more aware or beginning to use their psychic ability. And you've written about this in the book. And I find it really fascinating, this narrow margin of surveillance that's being done either by the military, the NSA, whoever is doing this, that they're able to monitor individuals at that level. It's such a fine line and subtle area. Can you maybe talk about, from your experience, how they're monitoring or maybe coming up on their radar?
Well, first to clarify, it seems there's more than one source, and the other, you know, some of it is human. The other source doesn't seem to be. It seems to be something else. And how people want to define that something else, it's up to people. I mean, some people call it aliens, interdimensional beings, whatever you want to call it. But there's more than one source monitoring people, in my opinion and in my experience, and they have different ways that they go about things. So for humans, like you mentioned NSA, there's the stuff that even the mainstream public is aware of, you know, the bottom rung methods of monitoring, like involving phones and cell phones, email, internet. The idea of using all this technology that we're surrounded by against the population for monitoring. You got GPS tracking devices, cell phone towers. You know, the public thinks it's fun and convenient, but it seems to, you know, possibly have a secondary purpose that are not in the public's best interest. So that's the bottom rung stuff that, you know, even everyday people are aware of for the most part. And then you kind of move up to more sophisticated methods, you know, that involves implants. even possibly psychic warfare, utilizing remote viewing to zero in on a target, you know, including what would be coming up in their future to possibly preemptively manipulate the outcome in something else's favor. And then you kind of move up to the non-human stuff, and they seem to be outside a linear time, and they just seem to have the innate ability to scan the population and know what's going on and who's who and what's what, including, you know, what's coming up in the future. So you have different sources, and they each have their methods.
Can you describe how, you know, what are the cases where you would come up on their radar? You pointed out that it's often when you begin to dig into this information and look a little deeper, maybe there's a blip on the psychic radar in some aggregator office somewhere. They can tell.
It depends on the situation you have. And this is in my own experience and what I've seen and encountered. The people who might start to they're waking up and starting to question their own reality. Like if someone is an abductee and they never really realized it, or they've got a mind control programming going on that they've been targeted, they don't know it, and they're starting to wake up, starting to question, starting to look closer and connect a few dots, which can pose a threat. If something's kind of had control over you your whole life and you didn't know it, and now you're starting to wake up. In those instances, I've definitely either experienced for myself and heard others talk about it, where it's like you almost kind of start attracting these negative entities that start kind of coming around and maybe harassing. You just start getting on stuff's radar. There's also the people who start investigating and researching conspiracy material, who get a little worked up by it. They start getting fearful and paranoid, and they start kind of, through their own thoughts and their own personal frequency, they're pulling in weirdness that starts happening to them. And that's kind of a separate thing, but it's kind of related. It's not just anybody that gets on stuff's radar. I think you have to be somebody who's had stuff happening to you that you're waking up to, and where you're going to maybe no longer be easily controlled by them. So they start sitting up and taking notice.
You had a list in your book. Some of the individuals are often connected somehow within the military, or their some family members have been in military intelligence, which is really sad to hear. And that's a specific type of individual that gets harassed or mind controlled.
That's a pattern that I've noticed in my research, is how many people have the military intelligence connections in their background and have weirdness in their life. I've definitely talked to a lot of people online or heard from people in email who discuss that. I can't say definitively that is what's happening, but it's just an interesting pattern that I've noticed. And I myself, my father he was in the Navy, but he was naval intelligence, and he reported to the NSA. I didn't know that for years. I only found that out in my late 20s. Around 2002, I found that out while talking to him on the phone. I never really realized, but when I heard that, it was like ding, ding, ding going off in my head. I was like, wow. I just thought he was Navy. He was tech personnel, so he was involved in spying during Vietnam, basically translating Morse code into type at like 90 words a minute. So he was basically involved in spying, and that's why he was affiliated with the NSA. And he had some weird things that apparently went on while he was in the military that he told me about, but he didn't really recognize it the way I recognized what he was saying. And it just became a possibility of one avenue for how me and my brother and my dad are on something's radar. And again, like I said, I've talked to other people who also have that same kind of connection in their background.
Our guest is Carissa Conti, author of the book Chasing Phantoms. We'll be right back after this break. Chris Acconti is our guest. She is the author of the book, Chasing Phantoms. You spoke about the black helicopters. It is sort of a cliche these days, but it's very real. I've seen it myself. In your book, when you discuss this type of harassment, then you describe the breakthrough that you had. Can you give us some details and describe that breakthrough?
The first helicopter incident, was Fort Lauderdale. I woke up around 7 a.m. in the morning. It was a bright, sunny, cheerful day, and I could hear a really loud, big helicopter hovering outside, just going and going. And I just kind of immediately knew that had something to do with me. I just knew it just, this isn't good. But I got up and I opened the front door of our apartment, and there was this all black military helicopter, where I later looked up military helicopters online, and the closest thing to the body type of this is what's called a Comanche. So it was a matte black colored military helicopter, looked like the Comanche helicopter body type. And it was hovering over the building right across from our building, which is the leasing office, but pointed straight at my front door. And it was just hovering there in broad daylight at 7 a.m. and just pointed at the door, blacked out windows. It just did that for maybe about another minute until I got up and showed myself, and then it turned and flew away. And that was the first one. The one I had the breakthrough about, that it showed up again in broad daylight, and it was in the back part of my apartment this time. And it showed up, and again, it stopped and was hovering and was pointed at the back door of my apartment. And so I went out to go look at it, and this time there actually was somebody who witnessed it, because the first one, even though it's hovering in broad daylight, nobody came out and looked at this thing. There's all these apartments and not one person came out to even see what was happening. And that just struck me as being really strange. But this time there was a guy in the parking lot. He was standing there with his hands in his pockets looking up at it. And he saw me come out and was looking at it. And so he looks over at me and he looks up at it. And it's pointed at, the door that I'm standing in. And then it kind of turned a little and did another little turn. And again, the blacked out windows. So it was like checking me out or something. And then I went back inside, because I'm supposed to be getting ready for work in the middle of all this. And I'm trying to get ready for work, get my outfit and everything like that. And then the helicopter moved and it came on top of my apartment. And it's a single story building. So it's just hovering straight over where I was in the kitchen. And just on right on top of me overhead, and it's just hovering. And it was just at that point, because I was new to all this, I was really scared. So it was terrifying to me, because I didn't know what it wanted. Why is it doing this to me? So I felt kind of panicked, which I don't have that vibe anymore. My vibe completely changed, which I talk about that in my book. Mm-hmm. I went from being completely panicked to getting a kick out of this stuff and thinking it's funny, which that's part of the breakthrough, which I'm getting to. But I'm standing there panicked, and I kind of tried to connect to my higher self, which I had sort of a connection with, to find out, like, why is this happening? Like, why would you let this happen to me? And I got this feedback to treat this the way you would an entity attack and watch what happens. And my previous experience with dealing with negative entities is that, you can't feed it fear. You have to connect to something that's, positive, and get rid of the fear, because when you have fear, that's what they can latch onto. So I was like, okay. So I moved over to the middle of my living room, and I stood there in the room and kind of closed my eyes, put my head down, and just started trying to connect up to something higher. And just, it's almost kind of like the scene in the movie The Matrix, where Neo puts his hand up and stops the bullets. It was kind of like that. That's kind of how I felt, like, no, I'm not having this anymore. Like, I'm not scared. This is stupid. No. And I just really was able to tap into something and lift out of that fear frequency. It's basically like changing the radio dial to something completely different. Mm. And the second I did that, the helicopter coincidentally just up and pulled away and just took off. And that was my breakthrough moment. I thought, and I opened my eyes and looked up with a smile. I was like, wow. So this thing had been hovering and harassing, just going and going and going, until the second I did that, and then it just left. Could be a coincidence, but I started to, anytime the helicopters would come back, which was a few more times, I had a few more instances, I would do that same thing, just change the radio dial, go from being scared, because I don't know, for some reason, it's just kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around and pointing at you, and it's kind of creepy, but just to go from being scared to just almost like, you know, feeling empowered, like knowing your own power and not being scared, and each time it would just stop. So, and I no longer have them anymore. By the last, you know, final encounter, I was literally, it was hovering and circling around our apartment building. And then I, you know, had to go to work. So I got in the car to drive to work, and it was following me up the street behind the tree line. And I got to a four-way intersection, and it stopped when I stopped and was pointing at me and just like, just making itself known that it's following me. And I just didn't care. I thought it was hilarious. And I had a camera, and I hung out my car window, and I'm like taking a picture, and I got my music going on my radio. And it, to me, it was just a joke. Like, I'm just not scared anymore. And that was the last time it ever happened, because I just, it had nothing to work with anymore. And it kind of sounds a little strange, because you don't see this ever mentioned in the conspiracy material about black helicopters tapping into like your mind and your feelings. But that seems to be the case. So most people get scared about this, and I just say there's no reason. Just stop being scared, and they got nothing to work with, and they'll go away, and they'll leave you alone. It's a little weird, I know.
Mm-hmm. We've had on a past guest, Penny Pierce, who wrote the book titled Frequency, The Power of Personal Vibration. And she believes that humans can change their frequency. And you mentioned in your book to be careful not to indulge in the fear and to change frequencies. And I thought, this is a pretty big deal. Here, Penny Pierce had written this book describing the ability that that can happen, that humans have this ability. You're actually doing it, and you're applying it. And
getting results.
And getting results.
There's a difference between kind of like burying your head in the sand, that kind of avoiding fear, and feeling empowered and just knowing that you have control over what's happening to you. Like, no, you are not doing this to me. No. And you just feel empowered. There's a difference. So I want to point that out. It's not the denial of it. It's you're totally acknowledging what's happening, and you're just empowered. Like, you feel strong.
Your book is titled Chasing Phantoms, Personal Experiences, Observations, and Theories into the Abduction Mind Control Phenomenon. You mentioned in this book that some of the clues to the strangeness in your life are very, very subtle. And most likely, to me, that's why it's important to log these events and keep a journal with times and dates. Can you tell listeners how that has helped you?
It helps with recognizing possible patterns in the chaos. If you're not sure if something really is what you think it might be, you know, you just log it. You know, don't just log it and put it on the back burner, but you have a record of it. You know, after you get enough stuff logged, then you can look back and see, is there a pattern here? I mean, what is all the accumulated logging showing me? And it helps with that. Plus, it helps because everybody's life is really busy, and we have so much going on, and it's easy to get distracted. It's easy to just forget that things happened. And I have that. Despite how much I've logged, I can't even tell you how much stuff I missed and didn't log because you get distracted. And I even seem to have some programming that seems to try to get you to purposely not pay attention and not log. So it just helps to keep track of what's happening to you, especially with busy life, and to be able to notice patterns. When I was getting all these weird anomalous marks on my body, like, you know, I'd go to bed and wake up with things that weren't there when I went to bed. Mm-hmm. I would take photos and I would just put the dates on them and just put it aside. So I had this ever accumulating pile of photos of strange thing, anomalous marks on my body. And then one day when I was going through the photos, I noticed, because I'd logged the dates, I noticed there was a pattern to the dates. Like, all these marks kept appearing at the same time every month. There was a pattern here, and that helped with determining that.
And what I also liked is you were able to corroborate your evidence that you've compiled with others through either email or people responding to your website. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, the very first source that I've ever corroborated with was It's a book called Practical Psychic Self-Defense. I highly recommend it around my website. It's by Robert Bruce, and it's all about, you know, negative entities and paranormal stuff, what it is and how it operates and what you can do to try to get rid of it. And that was the first time I was ever able to corroborate the paranormal stuff that had happened to me in that write-up that I call The Vortex. That was an important corroborative source. The book My Labs by Dr. Helmut Lammer and Marion Lammer, that was another important corroborative source. There was a lot of details mentioned in that book that were matching up to things that I was experiencing in my life. You know, I get emails from people a lot about my book, and everybody seems to have something that stood out for them in the book that matches their own experience, be it, you know, the strange childhood, the, you know, with the family situation and the military intelligence, to the kind of things that are happening to them in life.
Now, Carissa, in your book, something that very few people discuss in detail and theorize about are the ear tones and seeing numbers, synchronicities, and artificially generated synchronicities. But the ear tones, I think that that's a very interesting area. Can you describe what you've written about this?
Yeah, and just, you know, and not to be confused with tinnitus, which a lot of, like, the skeptics want to just point out that, oh, it's just tinnitus. It's not tinnitus. The ear tones are, as I describe it on my website, are intermittent, short-lived tones. You know, they can occur in either ear. And oftentimes they're preluded by, like, a pronounced muting effect where the sound in the room seems to abruptly kind of cut out and then the tone fades in. And in my instance, you know, they usually last about 10 seconds, and sometimes they're high-pitched, medium, low-pitched. And sometimes they can leave after effects, like a burned-out sort of feeling in your ear. And I started logging mine once they started happening to me in my life again after my brother had come and gone from my life and things sort of bled over to me. I was starting to get ear tones among a lot of other phenomenon, the numbers, the ear tones, and the abductions. And so I just started logging the ear tones along with everything else and just keeping track of any time they happen and all the details surrounding it, like what ear did it happen? How long did it last? What was the tone like? And was there any residual feelings in the ears? And what was I doing when it happened? Who was I talking to? What was I thinking in my head? Mm. And I just could log everything around the incident and just see, again, if there's any patterns and what it might be pointing to. And again, tinnitus aside, you can rule out the physical, biological reason for why you'd have that. There definitely seems to be an artificial source behind it, because it would happen so many times during very key moments. I'm having a really strange conversation with somebody, or I'm in the middle of doing something that might be kind of important on the timeline for myself, and I would get ear tones. But they would also, usually I would get it with maybe deja vus and number sightings. Like I'd get like a cluster of phenomenon that would start to happen, and that would be one of them.
Very strange. Seeing numbers, tell listeners what that's about.
Well, for me in particular, it's where, in my case, where a particular number seems to kind of follow me around in life. And I never had that phenomenon again until my brother, and I was first heard about it really from him. Although actually, there was a number I first started noticing when I was a kid. Every time I look at the clock, it was always a certain time, 9:51. I don't know, but I didn't think much of it. And then, you know, years later, there's Joe, and he's talking about these numbers that seem to follow him around. 141 was one of them. And I'm like, okay. And then during that time in Portland, when I was roommating with him there as well, I lived in California and Portland, 141 all of a sudden transferred over to me, along with another number, 119. And it started following those numbers and a few others started following me around during that time period, and it's never stopped. I mean, to this day, as of today, I'm still getting them. I'll get an urge to look at the clock, and it's always at those particular times, or things that come my way in life will have those numbers on them. And it's really kind of like loud and glaring, and it's always kind of creepy, and I don't enjoy it. And, you know, it's a complicated subject, because it's trying to figure out, what does it mean? Why are these happening? And everybody has a different theory. No one can really agree.
It's a thin line here on the when monitoring this reality. Often, those who can't quite articulate it very well are thought of as off balance or crazy. So as you did, keeping a journal is very important, and coming up with possible theories based on speaking with other people, reading books, things like that. What are some of your theories on the ear tones and the seeing the numbers?
The numbers one is, it seems to me, 141, when I get it, it's a negative thing, again, because it was originally affiliated with my brother, and he was kind of a negative source. So for me, that's a negative number, and I'll get it in life, it seems, when some sort of negative interference is occurring. Like, I've been told by a woman who is really intuitive, it seems to indicate if I'm on the wrong path in life. I'm doing something that's not the right path. Or just negative interference of some sort. I still haven't really figured out 11-9. I mean, it's a number because of my birthday, basically. And like I say in the write-up, I started reaching out to those numbers, like using them in passwords and such. And after doing that, that's when it seems to have come to me. So the 141 seems to come from my brother. The other ones come from my own self, possibly reaching out towards it. And then there's the viral nature of it, where it seems it can spread to different people. I've had so many people tell me that ever since reading about the 141 thing on my website, that they're now getting it all the time. It's kind of creepy. Oh. So there, I don't know. And then the ear tones.
Thanks a lot, Carissa.
The ear tones, I had a theory that I don't take credit for it, but it was kind of brought to my attention that it could tie into something to do with the etheric. And I mentioned this on my website, but like I say, there's a variety of ways in which ear tones are being triggered within people. So how can such seemingly varied experience produce the same effect on people? So what is the common denominator that these experiences share? And it was brought to my attention that it could have to do with the etheric. So just somehow the person's etheric is being disturbed in some way, and it's causing the ear tones. You would have to read the website. It's hard to describe, but I get into it in more detail on my website to explain it a little bit better.
Yeah, and I like the way the book is written. It's very easy to read. You explain it very easily. You know, it's not a slab of concrete text or abstract. It's very upfront. What have been some of the responses to your book since it's been published?
Well, I get a lot of emails from people who thank me for writing it, because a lot of what I'm saying and talk about is stuff that's happened to them, and it's providing validation. So they feel like, okay, I'm not crazy. There's somebody else out there who's had what I've had happen, and you know, they thank me. And a lot of times people will tell me their own stories and experiences. So it's been very positive.
Okay. Another area that you talk about in your book and on your website is interference, and specifically with friendships and relationships and isolation, which I think is quite common when people begin to dig into particular areas that are considered conspiracy. For example,
and they also don't realize that that's what's happening. So most people aren't aware of it. So it works.
Yeah, it does work. Some of the topics, such as geoengineering, and some people call it chemtrails. I remember there were a number of people around me who were digging into that area and describing how they had social meltdowns among their families and friends. Their wives had left them, or things like that. And it wasn't based upon my work in revealing it. They had seen it themselves and began discussing it. And then we eventually had met up and connected. But can you talk about what that is exactly? What's going on there?
It's a huge subject, but relationship interference and friendship interference, it's just designed to possibly, you know, try to break up partnerships where that could be useful and beneficial. It's almost like something wants everybody to be in the matrix and to live this mundane life, and it's trying to get you back into that if you're trying to get out of it. And there's, you know, in my article, it just gets into everything, including the role that one's own personal frequency can play in attracting negative stuff into their life. Some of it does seem to be from an external source of stuff, whatever it is, trying to interfere. But sometimes it's one's own personal frequency drawing in negative experiences. So you have to be careful and you have to really pay attention to what's happening and try to differentiate what's what. But you mentioned the chemtrail research and people like having everybody going crazy around them the second they started doing that. And mm-hmm. that could be, you know, to try to steer them away and discourage them from going further with that. And again, with relationships, is to break up partnerships that might be beneficial, not only to each other, but the effect it could have on other people. And me and my boyfriend, we experienced that. It's a wonder we're even still together at this point, considering what went on at the beginning of our relationship and how much interference we had and how many people were creating problems. And it wasn't even just people creating problems. It was stuff we were experiencing. Like every time we would be together, like just to hang out, we would both have intense drowsiness, so it was hard to stay awake. That also can make you suspicious and paranoid of the other person, you know, if weird things start happening to you every time the other person is around. And little do you know, it's happening to them too, and it's being orchestrated possibly by a outside source. But I get into tons of examples in that article. So if this is a subject that interests people, I would really encourage them to take a look at this article because it outlines in full depth all the different types of interferences that people can encounter.
Right. And I appreciate you pointing this out and connecting some of those dots, which are really important, because I feel that a lot of listeners, especially activists, who get into sensitive topics, and you have to do research in order to bring the information out so other people can understand what's going on around them. And while doing so, there are many pitfalls that could occur personally to those individuals. So it's really good that you've done that. Any suggestions you have for listeners who might be going through that and or any of this harassment and in terms of the frequency change as well?
Yeah. My suggestion is that basically to keep in mind that a lot of what people report of the harassment and weirdness that happens to them, it's what I call sidetrack circus diversion, fear and paranoia generators. You probably saw that in my book. It's stuff trying to toy with you, kind of like you're a lab rat. But what I've learned is that when you lose the fear, they lose you. They don't seem to have a use for the lab rats that get a kick out of what's happening to them or just flat out don't care, as I've learned. And so you have to seriously not care and to not let it bother you, and not pretend to, but just to truly, actually, you don't care. You're not, it's not bothering you. And even better if you actually find it funny, like I kind of have, and I've sort of adopted a psychotic mindset. So I went from being terrified at the beginning of these things that were happening to me to like, oh, I don't care, whatever. And it all just stopped when I had that mindset. It doesn't mean abductions and monitoring have stopped. And you have to seriously not care, not pretend to, but truly stop being bothered or caring. And, you know, even better if you find it kind of amusing or funny. That's just one of the things that I've learned. And then you kind of just, you have to get on with the business of living your life. You know, so many people let the knowledge of this stuff derail them with extreme paranoia and fear. And it's understandable because I used to be in that position myself. I mean, that's how I started out as well. It's scary, you know. They take it really seriously. And in a lot of ways, you could say they almost give this stuff more credit than it deserves. But you have to have a sense of humor about it. And you kind of have to strike a balance between having awareness of this other aspect of reality and what that implies, and then carrying on with your existence and doing whatever it is you need to be doing. So, you know, if stuff's watching you or abducting or intervening in your life, interfering, instead of being scared by it, maybe just instead kind of view it as it's a cool thing that you've been allowed to glimpse a side of reality that a lot of people don't get to see. So learn whatever you can from it and take measures to reduce its influence in your life. And not in a paranoid, fearful way, just neutral. And then just get on with the business of living your life. So I noticed in my case, when I adopted that mindset, everything changed. I mean, just almost literally overnight. All that overt harassment and weird stuff that was happening that's just like sidetracked circus diversion. It just stopped. I mean, it doesn't mean the abductions and the monitoring went away, but it just means all that craziness that was really distracting, it stopped. That's the biggest advice that I can give people. I talk about it in my book and all over my website.
Well, Carissa Conte, thank you so much for sharing this information, a lot of it personal, in your book, Chasing Phantoms, Personal Experiences, Observations, and Theories into the Abduction Mind Control Phenomena, and your website, Into Worlds, the number 2 is in there, intoworlds.net. Thank you so much for being on In Other News, and we'd like to have you back to maybe take calls from the listeners at some point, but thanks a lot.
Well, thank you for having me, and yes, I'd definitely love to come back, so thank you.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. See you next Monday, 10 p.m. Big thank you to those who supported this wonderful radio station during the fund drive. Thank you.